Hello and welcome to Bear Camp and Land, an Aaron Ramsey Ego podcast. My name's Jason. I'm not going to be your host because we're just going to have a chat today. And I'm joined by three of my fellow ABWers. The first, and maybe the most important, it's Simon Collings. Cocktail Collings, how are you doing?
Oh, very good. I thought you were going to go to, spoiler alert, the button monkey Danny. He's the most important, but... Danny, the button monkey. You said there's three of us here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and most important, him. I'm just meat in the room.
Nah,
don't worry about me, mate. I've been on in ages, but I'm good to be back. I'm glad to be back.
You're the meat in the sandwich, and we love having you back. You know, This is the thing, you know, we've missed you. We really have. How you doing? You okay?
I'm good. I'm very good. I've been very much enjoying this season, actually, which is odd because I can't remember being this upbeat and enjoying watching us play for maybe 4 or 5 years.
I've seen you after a couple of beers, don't I?
Yeah, but that's me drowning my sorrows, whereas now I'm drinking in rejoice. The hangovers are still just as bad. I can warn people about that.
You're a bit like Fifey, aren't you? You know, yay, champagne all round, cocktails all round. Let's get going. Yeah.
I'm going to the darts on Saturday, so I'm worrying. We're going 19 lads dressed as breakfast items.
Brexit items?
Breakfast items.
But
it could be taken as a Brexit protest because we're all English breakfast items. So people might think, oh, God. And I'm going as a knife. I'm going out of North London dressed as a knife. I'm not sure how good an idea that is. But we'll see. We'll see.
No, it goes a butter knife, okay?
Yeah. Nothing
sharp
about me.
Yeah, but I don't like to say. And remember, watch the haters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know.
Keep it real.
It's great to have you back, pal. I really wanted to be on with you this time because we haven't spoken for ages. So it's excellent. Excellent to have you back. Next in line of importance, it's the one, it's the only, it's the king of the crabs. It's John Welsh. Say hello, John.
Hello, John. How you doing, Jason? Good?
I'm over the moon now, mate. I've had an interesting evening, as you know, okay? And I probably wasn't in the best of moods when I joined this call, but you know what it's like an old pro, get into it straight away.
That's it. Cheers you up. I knew it would, as soon as you got talking, you'd enjoy it. You do know that, although you said there's three of us, well, there is three of us, but the other person isn't speaking tonight.
Isn't he?
No, he's not speaking tonight. It's just us three chatting. He's just doing the buttons.
He's being a right voyeur.
Yeah, he's lurking in the background tonight.
It's not the first time he's lurked in the background, is it?
I was going to say something so inappropriate then.
Hey, mate, don't worry. The ladies are chatterbait already now. You know what I mean? He's there, hands on knees, ooh la la. What can I say? Dan?
With the piss.
Dan?
He's not going to talk, mate. He's not talking, I told you.
Is he really not talking?
Yeah, he's not talking tonight.
Absolute blessing that he's lost his voice. Thank fuck.
It's the ghost of Danny tonight. Yeah.
Oh, the ghost of Aaron Ramsey's ego is caught up with Danny the GFP. Oh, Jesus wept. I don't know if we're going to be able to cope, listeners. Oh, right. And then he is on to it, is it? Let's get on to it. So, listeners, obviously, the boys last week had United and Tottenham, and they generously left us with Huddersfield and the carrier bag preview. So, we're just going to have some fun today and just shoot the shit, I think. I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
I'm bearing in mind, myself and John have already bored you about the Huddersfield game. I think it's only right and proper that Simon Collings gives us his opinion on the game. Simon, take it away.
Yeah, well, I'll bore you on the game now then if you guys already done it. Well, I was going to watch the full... I was working when the game was on, so I thought I'll watch the full 90 minutes when I get back in. And judging by the torrent of abuse and rage in the WhatsApp groups and on Twitter and from fans, I thought I'd spare myself the pain of watching it all. So I went and I found like an extended highlight, sort of 15, 20 minutes, which still was too long. but I mean, it was just... it was everything you expected from Huddersfield to be, to be honest. Incredibly disciplined, incredibly willing to make fouls to slow the game down. And they, for nearly the entire match, they did it exceptionally well. You know, I've seen Huddersfield two or three times this season, and I was adamant they were going to go straight down. But they've sort of got it together more defensively than going forward. You know, I didn't really feel threatened. But they stuck to their task, and fair play to them. And for me, I think it was such an important win. Obviously, you know, the Spurs game, winning that game, the Manchester United game, getting the point. But because of the emotional drop-off after those two games, I mean, those were two seriously fiery games, both those games. You know, Old Trafford away. I mean, I can't remember a time we've been kicked more than that. Spurs, North London derby, don't need to say anything about that. But the drop-off from that, it could have so easily, you know, burst a bubble in every good work that you'd done that week. And the guys in the pub were saying, you know, how 4 points from six in those games was fantastic. But if we had then made it, you know, 5 points from nine, all of a sudden, all that work becomes undone. So I was really impressed. And when Torreira got that goal, I mean, who else was it going to be at the moment? He's can do no wrong, that boy. And you could see what it meant to Emery as well. I mean, I love the guy. I mean, I sometimes find him incredibly awkward to watch on the sideline. You know, he just is bizarre the way he acts. But he absolutely loved that goal. And I think he knew in that same respect that all the momentum that you've worked and built up with two massive games, and you go and draw with Huddersfield, it absolutely would have taken the stuffing out of it. So to get the win, scrappy as it was, ugly as it was fantastic. And now moving forward, the unbeaten run stays. And those are the sort of games, you know, we used to come in here, didn't we? When Wenger was playing, we'd be frustrated. Oh, we didn't manage to do it. You know, again, we've been held back. And this time they found a way. So very pleased. Hope I haven't bored everyone too much. But I think for those three games, to finish it off like that was very much what was needed, because otherwise all that hard work, all the momentum would have gone.
No, I do agree. I mean, after the show, John, this is the thing now, you know, we're consistently building from performance on performance. But, you know, if we drop a couple of points or if we were to lose one, it's not going to be the end of the world, but it would feel as if it's a couple of steps back, wouldn't it?
Yeah, just because I think, you know, the Spurs game, the performance was great. I think the Man United game, it was okay, but you know, all four goals in that game were pretty sloppy. And this one, the performance, again, I didn't think was the best, but we got the win. And I think that's the sort of difference in the attitude and the general feeling around, or like from fans and stuff, speaking to people on Twitter, is, you know, when we don't play badly, at least we're still winning and we're keeping it going. And then if it's the next game or the game after, you know, where we get a performance again and pick up the sort of tempo and the pace of play, then everyone's happy. It was just a really kind of typical sort of Christmas period scrappy game. They did, like Simon said, Huddersfield didn't really offer a lot, did they, in terms of going forwards. But defensively, I thought they were quite solid, although they were a little bit foully, as Danny would like to say. The only thing I thought was a little strange was the sort of the lineup with the three central midfielders, and the fact that we basically relied so heavily on Kolasinac. We said this in the radio show, on Kolasinac and Bellerin to provide sort of get the bullets for Aubameyang and Lacazette to fire in. And unfortunately for those two, or Aubameyang in particular, sorry, missed his two best chances. But yeah, Torreira comes in and scores a great goal, and he's doing really well at the moment. And I think, did he win Player of the Month again? By like 70-odd%, I think the fans voted for him. So he's definitely quick become the fan favourite. And showing he can do a bit more up the top end of the pitch. So just got to keep things going now. The worry is like the defence and injuries and stuff we've got. That's sort of the issue that's come out of this game. And the suspensions as well.
Yeah, I mean, the suspension side, they were particularly galling. You know, they were in quick succession. And the guy, you know, both Sokratis and Mustafi knew they were on the fourth yellow card. You know, how frustrating must that be for Unai?
Yeah, and the Mustafi one as well. I mean, Jesus. I mean, I hate diving. And he'll argue, you know, there was slight contact, so he could he could go down, but just what, such a bad way to pick up a suspension.
I suppose after the Xhaka booking,
yeah, you know the referee's looking for it.
Yeah, but if you look at the week before with the Son penalty against us, you know, if Son's is a penalty, that's a penalty for Mustafi all day long, surely.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I don't think either of the penalties, so I agree with you, really. I mean, that's the issue, and that's always the complaint we have, isn't it? Consistency with officials. That's all everyone wants, you know, is consistency. And in my opinion, the Son's wasn't a penalty, and that wasn't a penalty either. So I can understand why Mustafi has gone down, because he'll think, I've got the slightest touch, I can go down. But for me, stay on your feet. I mean, we saw it earlier in the day with Salah's goal. I was at that Bournemouth game. You know, he got a whack on the back of the leg and he carried on and he scored the goal. Yeah. And that's what I want. And I think for Emery, the frustration will be Socrates. You know, we know Emery plans everything to the nth degree. He will know exactly what players are near suspension, and he will have informed Mustafi and Socrates, said, look, obviously they're going to get a fifth yellow card at some point, but you are very close getting suspension here. I don't want you getting a yellow card unless it's an absolute necessity, especially in a game like that where there was no real need for it. And they're both now suspended and withholding out. It leaves an issue, doesn't it? Hopefully Mavropanos will be back soon. Koscielny sounds like he might get some minutes on Thursday. But I'm sure it's something we'll discuss, what they're going to do there at centre-back. But whether it means dropping the Egyptian Busquets in there, that might be the solution. I don't know.
It's going to be interesting, John. You know, we in the past, you know, let's be honest, this isn't the first manager we've had a series of injuries under. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, the previous under Wenger, it was a bit of a stick to beat him with. You know, but again, you know, they do happen. Injuries do happen to everyone. It's galling, the fact that we've had Xhaka banned for the United game. He picks up a yellow card the very next game.
Yeah.
You know, and the two centre-backs to pick those up, you know, how can I put this? It's almost shooting yourself in the foot from these guys, isn't it? And you'd have thought they would have been a little smarter about how they went about it.
Yeah, I mean, those three bookings that were all given for simulation, I actually thought Xhaka was fouled. Excuse me, but I did think the other two were simulation, were rightly yellow cards.
Xhaka he's got an Oscar nomination for that, mate.
I thought Mustafi and Guendouzi's ones were, but I know everyone will say, "Well, it's because you like Xhaka more, and you're not a fan of Mustafi and Guendouzi." But
Guendouzi's was the worst. That was that was no contact. Xhaka's, I think. Xhaka almost made it look more like he dived than, you know, he actually made it look worse. Whereas Mustafi's borderline, I think.
But, yeah, I mean, they're stupid ones to pick up. Socrates, you know, it's a foul. There's not a lot you can do about it. I think Mustafi's one is kind of negated by the fact he picked up what looked like a hamstring injury. So he will probably be out of Southampton anyway. But it's more of an issue now, I think, because we looked so much more settled in this back three, which was kind of enforced by other injuries, with Nacho being out, because I think it's pretty clear Emery likes Klasinic as a left wing back, but maybe not as a left back. So maybe we can help the defence in a little bit in by going back to a back four again. But yeah, it's not the smartest thing to do. It's an interesting question, because Torreira is on four bookings at the moment. Would you... Now, we're not ones on here on Burkamp One Land to condone cheating, obviously, but would you like Torreira to get a booking in the Southampton game so he misses the League Cup game, but he can play against Liverpool?
Oh no, I would rest him against Saints to make sure he's in that League Cup game.
Yeah,
for me, that's more important than the Liverpool game. Personally,
It's an interesting one. Yeah, I'm not sure.
But this is the thing, you know. You mentioned earlier on, Si, you know, talking about, you know, losing momentum against Huddersfield after the good work of United and the Scum game. I think this season, yes, it would be nice to win a cup, okay, But I think the Europa League is the one that we really have to aim for, you know, because that gives you the Champions League money, okay, which, you know, is vital to us strengthening the squad, etc. With regards to the League Cup, I couldn't give a monkey's, but then...
If it wasn't Spurs, yeah. I would. It would be different, I think. I think it's anyone else, even if it was City, United, I think just because it's Spurs, that is the exception, I think. Other than that, I'm banging agreement with you.
Yeah, that does. That's what makes it difficult. Because, I mean, like, you, I know, obviously, that's thinking ahead a bit, but losing him for the Liverpool game would be huge.
Yeah.
Can we bring back Matt Flam?
You know, there's games in between, isn't there? Because we've got Burnley and Brighton. So how many games would he be? Would it be just one game for five yellows?
Yeah, it's one game.
Yeah. So he could get the suspension out of the way before then. So I suppose you could, you know, take one for the team, so to speak, against Burnley and miss Brighton.
This is the sort of conversation I imagine Sergio Ramos having with himself, sort of.
Yeah, but it's. But I think now, I'm not saying this is the sort of thing Emery would do, but I hope that having someone like Lichtsteiner, having players like Socrates who are older, got a bit more experience, are having these conversations in the dressing room.
Oh, Lichtsteiner, 100%.
I mean, he definitely is.
I think they've always had these conversations in the dressing room. I remember, you know, the same conversation for certain players under Wenger, okay? You know, this has always happened. It's not as if all of a sudden somebody switched the light on when you and I walked through the door and all of a sudden we joined the 21st century. Yeah. You know, this has always gone on, you know, in every team, okay? It's just for us now, it's the new manager, isn't it? It's an exciting time.
I think we've always been calculated in terms of not playing players with bookings. I personally, I might be wrong, prove me wrong 100%. I can't remember us as much seeing players pick up bookings to miss games.
I can't remember names off the top of my head, but I've seen it.
Thinking in Wenger's earlier years, I think in the later years, maybe not so much.
Yeah, maybe in the...
Let's be honest, we were getting kicked in the latter years, weren't
we? Yeah, we weren't doing the kicking, were we?
I'm sure I remember like Vieira picking up yellow cards and stuff intentionally so he'd miss one game, so he wouldn't miss a game against United.
Yeah, low cards. Like that. Are you colourblind? Those are red, bro. You know what I mean? I mean, the funny thing is, I mean, we spoke earlier on about momentum and what have you. It's absolutely fascinating to watch, you know, how fragile we think this is. Oh, we've got to win the next game, or we can't lose, and what have you. We've just gone 21 unbeaten. Is it the fact that the league is so strong with those top five or six clubs now? Is that the reason that we kind of live in a little bit of fear?
I think it's if you look at someone put up a league comparison the other day, of the same, oh my God, Inter Milan just conceded. What are you doing? Sorry, Spurs are going through at the moment. You all know this already because this is in the past. Anyway, I got completely lost on my point there, Jay. See what you've done to me. See what happens.
You were talking about the comparison with the league.
That was it, yeah. So like last season, I think at this point, City were like 10 points clear. And I can't remember who it was. It was second at the time, but everyone else, there was a wider gap anyway. From first to second, and then also second down to like sixth spot. But whereas you look at it now, other than United, who are far away, I mean, there's nothing really. Arsenal, Chelsea, Tottenham are all right in there, 2 points. City aren't that far away, and neither are Liverpool. It's so much more competitive than last season that I think where you drop a point in a game, you know, you only get a draw, or you go from a draw to a loss, and that kind of thing is going to make so much more difference this season in terms of getting into the top four. If, like Jay said, we don't win the Europa League, that is going to matter so much more now than it did previously. Do you think the league is more competitive? And I also think the teams like Everton are better now. I think Bournemouth are a much better team. I think Leicester have improved. Wolves have come up and done really, really well. And you saw Huddersfield, a team that's in the bottom three. Although they didn't threaten much defensively, they're very, very sound and they're hard to break down. So I really think the league and keeping the momentum, because you just can't afford to drop points. If you get any sort of gap, like I can't see United getting back in the top four. They're just too far away, which is ridiculous to say with the team they've got.
And you know, we're so early in the season as well.
Yeah.
You know,
but 8 points already can you see them get clawing back 8 points on all the other teams? It's so difficult to do that now.
Yeah, it's not them winning that many points. It's
other teams dropping
that many points. Like
they've got to go to, you know, like come to us, Chelsea, Tottenham, all those. They've got to win those games and then hope for other losses.
They need three or four teams to be dropping, and it's just that won't happen. So it won't happen. And I agree with you in the sense that, I mean, we're saying we've gone 21 games unbeaten. Probably 5-6 years ago, that sort of run would have you right in the title race. And I wouldn't say we're out of it, but we're certainly not, you know, we're on the periphery of it. And we've had that run.
I think someone put up, if we kept the sort of form we're in now in terms of draws and wins and stuff to the end of the season and chucked in two more losses, we'd end up with 80 something odd points, which basically would have been enough to win the Premier League.
That's no way going to be enough.
I think it was something like every year out of barring like six maybe seasons, which is a ridiculous stat. And you think you go on that run and that's probably not going to be enough to win the league this year.
You're going to need 90 points, I think.
And the funny thing is, somebody brought up the stat, when the commentators brought up the stat on Saturday before the Huddersfield game, we are 3 points better off than we were this time last season.
Yeah.
You know, the margins between success and failure are so fine, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, and we're looking at this. I mean, if I'm this isn't a United podcast, obviously, but if you're Jose, you've got to catch three teams, and that's how you've got to look at it, you know? Yeah. But I mean, I just look at this season at the moment, and I'm excited, I'm concerned, it really is a plethora of emotions going through, and you're just wondering how we're going to cope, you know, because when the first loss does hit us, you know.
I think that's what it's all about, the reaction to that first loss. That's when you'll see where the team really is. Because it's going to happen at some point. We'll lose a game, obviously.
Because the City and Chelsea games, I mean, I know they obviously were back to back, but they sort of...
They kind of were a write-off.
They're never a free hit, but they all were a bit, as much as a free hit a game against a big team can be, they were about as good a free hit as you could get.
Yeah. And I don't think we played that badly in either of them, to be honest. I think City are just a better team. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
I think the Chelsea game we could have won.
Yeah, 100%.
I thought we should have won the Chelsea game because, you know, if you look at the chances that we wasted, and they were glorious chances. And, you know, we something hasn't changed since the Chelsea game. We were weak defensively as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's frustrating because, sorry, this is a question for you now. You know, myself and John always do the live shows, etc. We've been disappointed in performance at times, quite a lot of the time. Impressed with the way this team grits it out and wins the points, and we are concerned defensively. What are your thoughts on that? Give me your opinion on that.
In terms of where we are defensively
and performance-wise.
I mean, defensively, I don't know about you guys, and maybe we'll get your views on a bit, but I'm not overly sold on the back three, personally. From the outside looking in, I mean, the rationale seems to be he's obviously not overtly happy with how we're defending. So if he gets an extra body in the three, that can help solidify it. We also, one of my main gripes, and I know people like Fyth and others have always said that we don't have that out and out winger. So playing three at the back and getting your width from two wing backs, someone like Kolasinac, who's a very good wing back, not a good left back, and Bellerin again, who is a good wing back, makes sense when you don't have those players out wide. But I'm still not fully sold on that back three as being the way, in terms of the way we want to play in possession and keeping the ball. I still don't think that's the best way for us to play. But I don't think he has the players to play a 4-2-3-1, which I think, if going forward for the style of football Emery wants to play, that for me is the formation we need to play. But at the moment, he's having to make do. And I feel like the back three, similarly to when Wenger brought it in, was a case of strengthening the defence with numbers and making the best of what you got. Because for me, I don't think we look as good if we're trying to attack and play this Emery ball, as we've been calling it. The three at the back, for me, doesn't quite do it. I just don't think you get enough going forward. Simply because you essentially got five defenders on the pitch.
Okay, and what about sort of, you know, we talk about our defensive frailties. Nothing much has really changed since last season, in my eyes. I mean, what's your viewpoint on it?
I think without the ball, in terms of pressing and working on teams, I think we're better. But I agree with you. I still feel the lack in that world-class centre-back who's going to bring that authority, that calmness in the defence. And Socrates, I'll give him credit, has been a lot better than I thought it would be. When we signed him in the summer, I wasn't overly convinced. You know, speaking to people who watch German football more than me, said he was good, but felt you've almost signed him, you know, 4 years probably after you'd want to sign him. And I was worried we've got this big, slow, lumbering centre-back who's prone to an error, which sounds very similar to every other centre-back we've got. And we have been, but he's been, to his credit, he's been good, he's been better, but it just feels like it's a little bit done on the cheap, not quite what you need. And I know it's difficult to compare it with someone like Liverpool because backed by huge owner in John Henry, who's got the money to spend, but the difference of them having Van Dijk, and I know it seems bold to say, but I feel just having a player like him of that quality in that defence would completely transform that defence for Arsenal, I think, in terms of calmness, composure, solidity, just one player. I don't think it's far off from being a good defence. I really don't. I think it's one player being in there who's going to bring that authority, that calmness, that control. And for me, if you're going to spend big money anywhere in the squad, that's where I'd do it. Because I think someone like Holding's a good player. He's obviously out injured, but alongside a real, real, you know, serious centre-back, I think it would completely change that defence. And at the moment, it just, as you said, it just feels a little fragile, like it could collapse. And I'm still not sold on Mustafi. You know, he dives in, drives me up the wall. You can find it on YouTube or Twitter, but there's that Wenger clip where he just, and Gabriel used to be the same. They just dive in and give away fouls and needless fouls. And it means that we're never really quite solid. The defence is good, but it's still not one of those top two defences that City and Liverpool have got.
Our goals against record amongst the top six, I think other than United, is woeful in comparison, isn't it? Mm. You know, and this is the thing. I've got to be honest with you. I mean, Socrates has been better than I thought he would be. He really has. I've got to admit that. But I don't think he's been as great as being made out, because you know to be fair to him, he's missed kind of half the season with injury. But you know, I just don't see him stopping the things that need stopping. You know, I don't see him being there all the time. People have a pop at me about that, but I can give a monkey's. But I think the interesting part on this now for me is, I don't know, John, Sides talked about the 4-2-3-1. But how many of our players are struggling with this 4-2-3-1 aspect? Because, you know, we've not seen great form out of Ozil. We've not seen great form out of Ramsey. We've not seen great form out of kind of, you know, Aubameyang. Aubameyang's goal scoring record is great. But, you know, as far as getting value for money out of him on the flank, we haven't. You know, it will be, has shown a good stretch of form and then come off the boil. Mkhitaryan, I think, you know, in the game, the big games he's played against Liverpool and Scum, we've looked more solid with him in the team, but he hasn't really performed, if you know what I mean. So the three, the only person who's really, to my mind, given us value for money is Lacazette, who's integrated into the system really well, but none of the three, no matter who's played there, has shone.
I think it kind of backs up what Si's saying, because I think you look at the best form you've seen from Iwobi, the best performances from Mkhitaryan have all been when we played that sort of the four at the back, and whether it's 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, you know, the sort of 4-2-2-2 hybrid thing we did for a bit at Fulham. That's when they've had their best game. Since we've gone to three at the back, Iwobi looks a little bit lost in the system. Mkhitaryan hasn't been as good. His work off the ball has improved, but on the ball, he doesn't look anywhere near as convincing. Aubameyang has looked better, but I think that's more down to the fact that he's got to play through the middle than anything else. But you can't complain too much about Aubameyang because his goal record is absolutely ridiculous that he's got.
Sensational.
Yeah.
Sensational.
You know, some, I think before the Huddersfield game, he had like a 100% strike rate or something like in terms of conversion. It was like absurd. Like no one's, I think he was beating like Messi and Ronaldo's all-time stats in terms of conversion rates, which is just disgusting. So, if, you know, look, everyone knows Aubameyang's best position is through the middle. The question is, can you put Lacazette and Aubameyang through the middle together? And I actually think you can, because when you talked about Ozil there and Ramsey, Ozil is a separate subject because there's something going on there. And at the moment, he's injured, so you can't really consider him for the squad. Ramsey, you basically have to, until something changes, I'm of the opinion that you look at him as a player who's leaving, and if he can contribute something in a game, which he has done a lot of times this season, he's been fantastic. He's a, you know, consummate professional, then that's great. And you get that out of him. You did it in the Spurs game. You know, Man United obviously unfortunately got the injury, but he's done it all season off the bench and when he started, you know, helping the kids through in the Europa League games. For me, if you're playing 4-2-3-1, I would like to see Lacazette playing with Aubameyang, but, you know, playing with one just behind the other. And I think Lacazette's got that ability to play. It's not really a 10, but it's a second striker, and you're almost defending as a 4-4-2, you know, when you're without the ball, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
he's got the work rate, he's got the ability.
Wouldn't you lose that ability to hold the ball up at the tip of the sword, so to speak? Because the one thing we see with Aubameyang is he's not great at holding up the ball.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and you lose that pace coming from deep, if you know what I mean. Whereas if you're playing Aubameyang in behind, you know, you play the ball up to Lacazette, the runner in Aubameyang coming off him, and Lacazette's ability to play that man in, wouldn't that be a more preferable route?
I mean, you wouldn't have the two positions as like fixed, you have to play this role. They'd clearly be fluid and moving constantly. Yeah. And I think they've got a good enough understanding already. You can see there's a real friendship there, and they do look for each other on the pitch and understand each other's runs. I actually think those two basically is, you know, up front, and it's understood that whoever is the deepest at the time, if we lose the ball, you're the one who drops back in and helps out quicker than the other, and sort of regain the shape. I think that would work. When Ozil was available again, then maybe you have to look at it and say, right, Mesut, can you do it at 10? If you're not doing it at 10, maybe we have to try you wide. You know, because I think Iwobi, for me, when he's played on the left-hand side in that system, has been fantastic. Since we've gone to this back three, it hasn't really worked. And you saw that as in the Huddersfield game was a great example. We had no creativity, basically, in the first half. And then you had those subs. Lacazette came off. I'm hoping that was more of a, you know, just because he's coming back from injury and, you know, resting him up a little bit. And you had, who is it? Was it Iwobi and Mkhitaryan come on?
Yeah.
But you needed some creativity and some spark, and they still didn't really give it. And I don't think this system particularly suits those two. So I'm hoping that we do switch to the back four again. Nacho being fit and available might be a big part of that, because you can then play him at left back. Unless, of course, he has to play centre-half, because we have no other ones fit and available. But that's what I'd like to see going forwards. And I think there's a lot of fans who feel that you could have Aubameyang and Lacazette as a front two. There's no reason you can't do it. We've seen it a few times this season, and it's worked really, really well. You saw it, was it the Fulham game when Welbeck was playing up front with Lacazette? Or was it Aubameyang? I can't remember who it was now. Played with one of them, doesn't he?
Lacazette, I think, and then Aubameyang came on and got a couple, I'm pretty sure. But
yeah, and that was, okay, it's Fulham, it's different. You know, they've defensively been pretty poor. But if you've got players who are willing to do the running and the work rate and put the work in that Emery clearly likes, you know, and he gives them detailed instructions, then I think those two can do it. And that's a real headache. Myself and Mr. Hollick were talking last time we were on and saying about how funny it is now that, you know, it used to always be two strikers up front, and you'd have your back four, and you'd have one centre back for one striker, one centre back for the other, and that was it. And nowadays, there's like, you'll have three at the back, and sometimes they struggle to mark one striker. Well, imagine trying to mark those two. It, you know, it to me, it just makes sense.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, the way the game has changed has brought that change in, you know. I mean, back when you had two strikers up front, they had lumps kicked out of them. Nowadays, yeah. You know, you go near Son or Harry Kane, anybody like that, you know, before you get within five inches of them, they're flying over crying on the floor, aren't they? So, yeah. You know, you've got that aspect of it. So, you know, as John's alluded to, he believes we can play two up front. My concern is that creativity aspect, okay? You know, we played Guendouzi, Torreira, and Xhaka on Saturday. Huddersfield were disciplined, stroke ill-disciplined in their attitude and their game plan in the match. But creatively, we really struggled. You know, I know, yes, the Lacazette goal should have been given onside. And, you know, there's a worldy save from Lossell in the first half. But in creating chances this season, we seem to have a dearth of creativity. Then all of a sudden, second half after the changes, bang, you know, Unai makes his substitutions and we're okay. But we really struggled on Saturday with that, didn't we? You know, even with the substitutions, you know, it was a quick counter or something like that, which actually created chances, not good possession and good, solid, patient build-up play.
Yeah, I mean, we alluded to it at the start, but some credit's got to go to Huddersfield for making it that difficult and making it that hard to break them down. But I do feel at times when, well, you see, someone we can probably get into discussing it and what we think about him, but when we don't have Ozil on the pitch, I do think when a game is like that, when it's congested, when it's tight, when it's difficult to find that pass, I do see Arsenal missing Ozil in those moments. Because a team like Huddersfield, fantastic, you know, when we're playing someone like Tottenham, and we saw in the second half when players like Aubameyang, Lacazette have got the space to stretch them, and Ramsey can attack that space. It's fantastic. You can pull them a bit, and if a team's playing a high line like Tottenham, great. You know, you can drag them about and you can make space for your midfielders. But when you're playing someone like Huddersfield, who are so happy just to keep dropping off, it needs someone who's going to have the bottle to get on the ball, to find that pass, that needle in that haystack. And when Ozil's not there, I don't think Arsenal have the players to do that. And that for me is a key difference, I think, for certainly those games. And I see similarities with Liverpool sometimes. You know, they're fantastic with Firmino, with Salah, with Mane. But where they miss someone like Coutinho is those games where it was incredibly congested, incredibly tight, and someone would do that magic moment to unlock it all, and it'd be Coutinho. And for Arsenal, I think it's Ozil. I think he's that player. I'm not sure if you guys agree with that, but for me, that's where the difference is, and that's where you need Ozil in that number 10, finding the gap.
Okay.
It's great having Ozil, Mkhitaryan, and all these guys, Ramsey, want to bomb on and stuff, but when the space isn't there, you need someone who's going to create it. You need that special player, and that's Ozil.
I think the problem for Ozil this season, I'm not sure how many assists he's had. I think it's only one or two in the Premier League this season.
Mm.
It's one, sorry. He's had one assist this season. He's hardly been in sparkling form. There are obviously issues around his relationship with Unai. And is he missing runners? Because let's be honest, Mkhitaryan is not a runner. Iwobi's not a runner. Welbeck was. Guendouzi, Torreira, and Xhaka, none of them get ahead of the ball. They all like the ball in front of them. So are we giving Mesut the best tools available to him with our current squad selections for him to flourish? Because if he's not got runners going, okay, then I don't see how he's going to make a difference, because our movement off the ball is all too often too poor.
I think, you know, there's clearly something going on with Mesut, and, you know, at the moment he is injured. You've seen some of the pictures he put up his training with what's his name? Shad?
Is that Shad Forsyth, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing individual training with him. So he obviously got something wrong with his back again, but there's clearly more to it just from the way Unai has spoken about him in post-match, you know, interviews. That's pretty obvious for everyone to see. Look, he hasn't sparkled, or he sparkled in the Leicester game for 60 minutes.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah, and it was absolutely brilliant to watch. But, I mean, and there's no taking away from that. It was an amazing performance. The problem is those performances are too far and few between in an Arsenal shirt, and they have been. And Ozil, for me, he relies so much on, and it's going back to what you're saying, Jace, about runners, but it's not just runners. It's if the team isn't humming right, it's harder for him to show what he can do. You know, he's still going to be able to pass and run with the ball and move with it, and he can drop a shoulder and go past the player. It's not something he always does. But unless, you know, people are either finishing his chances like you saw with Germany at the World Cup, or, you know, he's getting the right movement, or they're understanding where he wants them to run, that kind of thing, then it's not going to come off for him. And I think at the moment under Unai, you know, his first thought is win the game. It's not performance. You know, we've said that some of the performances this season haven't been amazing, but we're still winning games, and that's the most important thing. That's what he's got to get sorted first. I'm not sure Mesut quite fits his, you know, style of play. Is exactly what Emery actually wants. Not just like work rate and that kind of thing, but I just think in the way he wants to play the game, he likes midfielders who, yeah, can create a pass and everything, but can also do the dirty combative work. And, you know, he's a big fan of, Chris has spoken about him, Ava Banega. He's had him at a few clubs. And he's a guy who can create and find a pass and get an assist, but can also stick his boot in and play defensive midfield and sit back deeper and that kind of thing. And Mesut isn't that kind of player. He needs a bit more freedom. And I just think, as much as like it would have been amazing to have him in the Huddersfield game, because I think as the game goes on, they're going to tire. There's going to be more spaces. That's obvious, you know, and he's going to be able to exploit that. The problem is, can you afford to have someone in your squad like him who's only as effective in those kind of games and not in the bigger ones?
John, do you think with him quickly, do you think with Mesut that the issue partly is either you build your entire team around him as the focal point and you say, look, everything, channel, get the ball to him, all runners, or he doesn't work? Because if Emery's building this well-oiled slick machine where each, you know, each part works together in tandem,
yeah,
is it an argument that perhaps Mesut doesn't fit that system? Because in an Emery team, from what I can see, there's no one most important part. Every player does, it needs to work. It's all 11. Whereas in a, probably in Ozil's ideal world, you know, he plays number 10 and the whole thing's built around him.
Yeah, I think it's true to an extent. But then you look at his time at Real Madrid, he played on the right a lot for the majority of his time there. And, you know, he did work hard and he was fantastic. But the issue is, I think there's a big difference between La Liga and the Premier League in terms of intensity and the physicality. That makes it harder. I think you're right in that Emery doesn't have, you know, you're my one key star player. You know, it's all about the system and the team working as a unit together. And we've seen that Ozil can do it, but the problem is his consistency. Now, if Ozil was a player who was on, you know, 100 grand a week, you wouldn't be having the conversation. It's only because he's on the 350 or whatever it is grand a week and he's the big star name player that anyone even has this conversation about him.
We don't have it about Mkhitaryan.
Well, which is a strange one, to be fair, because he's still on like 200 and something. I think the difference is Mkhitaryan's a little bit more flexible. But again, I would also argue that he hasn't had a great season. I think he's got like one assist in 12 or something. So, you know, Emery seems to like Mkhitaryan though, but his work rate and everything else he does off the ball. Again, I'm not saying that Ozil shirked work or anything like that. He's got great running stats and everything. But I think Mkhitaryan just does it better for Emery at least. So, look, I like Mesut and I think he's a great player, but I just don't think Emery is a fan of him, and it wouldn't surprise me if you saw him go. But yeah, I do agree with Simon.
Would you sell him, and would you want him at Inter?
I'd take him at Inter, yeah, because we don't have a creative player. If you don't know, I'm an Inter.
I imagine he'd be good in Italy as well. I don't know why.
There's a bit more space and a little bit more time. It's a different league, but if the offer came in, I would take it. And it's, again, it's not a slight on him. I just think it's on what Emery is trying to do with the, you know, with the system and the way he wants to play. I do think we still have creativity because I think Iwobi's been fantastic when we've played the four at the back and he's played from the left-hand side. And I think Mkhitaryan's been better. I do tend to think we need a little bit more from the other players, though. And I do agree with Simon, you know, we obviously missed him in the Huddersfield game. But you could have, you know, if Iwobi was in form, then he might have come on and done something, and so does Mkhitaryan, you know. So I don't know, it's a difficult thing with Ozil. It's so divided. It's kind of like the Ramsey thing. You know, people are, it's kind of either love or hate with both of them. And I just think if a good enough offer came in the summer, you know, there's loads of talk about Inter and Milan and a few other clubs, I'd definitely consider it. Just because the wages he's on that you could split, you know, into other players and invest in different positions and stuff. Because the squad, I mean, like, you know, when you just look at the squad overall, forwards is obviously fine. You've got Lacazette and Aubameyang. It's nothing you really need to worry about. You've got Nketiah coming through. In terms of creative players, yeah, maybe there is a bit of an issue there. Defence, I think you need probably another centre-back. You definitely need a left-back.
We're going down the line there a bit. Yeah. Question for the both of you then, okay? What do you think would be Emery's preferred tactical setup? Si, you go first.
I think he would like to play long term. I think he'd want to play a 4-2-3-1, personally. And I think that would be Torreira and Xhaka as the two. We touched it there about his unwillingness to, you know, pin one player as being the whole fulcrum of the attack. And it would be the same in the sense that he wouldn't always play Ozil every week. But my guess is long term, if he was picking his team, you know, if it was cup final or whatever the next day, would be Lacazette as the number nine. Because I think in terms of what he does, in terms of bringing other players in, his link play, his hold-up play. I mean, Aubameyang's fantastic and, you know, he's been brilliant. And we talked about his ratio of, you know, scoring with near enough every shot he had. But he does go, I've seen him go 40 minutes without touching the ball, Aubameyang. And that's just the way he is. That's the nature of the player he is. And then he'll get one touch, bam, and he scores. And that's fantastic. But sometimes I feel as a nine, he's just sort of drifting in and out of the game, not doing enough, which is why I think it would be Lacazette as the nine, Aubameyang cutting in from the left, Ozil as the 10. And I think, there's been talk of getting a winger in, but I think he would want an out-and-out right winger, personally, on that right-hand side.
Okay, but having said that, so you believe 4-2-3-1 is his preferred
long setup. Term, yeah, that's what long I think. Term. Yeah.
But at the moment, that nobody who's played in those in any of those three positions, nobody has shown. No matter who you played there, nobody has really
in that formation. You think?
Yeah, in that formation, nobody has shown consistently. Okay, and nobody has really thrived under it. And that, for me, is a concern. Because I think, you know, you're looking at a guy who's played 4-3-3 in the past quite successfully. Okay. The three aren't really working out for him. They're just not. And the number of cheap goals we're letting in. Now, regardless of our league position, that is going to start to hurt us down the line. And when you're going for top four, which could come down against goals scored or goals against the goal difference ratio, it's something we're going to have to start being mindful of. So how does he solve the problem of nobody quite working in the three and tighten up the defence? Is it just changing personnel?
In the back three, do you mean, or the midfield three?
The midfield three and the back four. Now,
I think Torreira has been fantastic. I think Xhaka has been really good. I think he gets a proper hard time, Xhaka. I think if you look at the number of touches and passes, everything goes from in the entire team.
How much we missed him in the Man United game.
I think he's massive. I think he's chronically underrated, Jack, in the role he does. So much of the game goes through him. Everything just seems to, you know. And John will probably be able to talk more about his time when Xhaka was at Gladbach and was being coached to the nth degree. But for me, it feels like more and more game by game, he's becoming so important. Just everything goes through him. The entire team is channeling through him. And as much as we do talk about Ozil and his importance, Xhaka, for me, has been fantastic. And I think him and Torreira, two players, have been good. I will admit with you, getting the best out of Aubameyang, Lacazette, playing left, playing right, playing through the middle is perhaps an issue. But I feel in terms of, you know, our best central midfield pairing, for me, it's Xhaka and Torreira all day long.
Yeah, but that's not been the issue, has it? That's not been the issue. The only issue with Xhaka this season is his concentration levels and his willingness to give away a goal through an act of stupidity. You know, he gave away the ball in the box again on Saturday.
He still does have that, doesn't he? That's his...
Yeah, and my only issue with Xhaka is it's the same issues we've had with him since he's arrived at the club, and he's not really worked on at all, and he's not improved at all. But, you know, you saw against United, we massively missed him. You know,
better this season, I think. He's better this season.
Well, he's given away, what, two or three goals so far and two or three other goal-scoring opportunities? You know, he's probably the biggest liability in regards to losing goals.
But is that... This is a gripe I sometimes have with stats where it's like... I'm trying to think of a player of an example... Someone like Ericsson or someone of that mold, or, you know, these really creative players, like, oh, you know, he's given the ball away sort of 15 times. So, well, that's because he's making, you know, 125 passes or whatever in a game. He's on the ball so much. And I admit with Xhaka, the issue that he needs to resolve is when he gives the ball away, it seems to be like, you know, bam, it's a goal scoring opportunity. And sometimes he plays in the wrong areas. But I do think part of that is the fact so much goes through him that when we make an error, when we break down, it's probably going to be Xhaka.
I'm being incredibly harsh on Xhaka here, but I think it's an area of the game, you know, where he hasn't improved upon at all, okay? And as a professional footballer, he should improve upon it because that's part of the remit, part of the job, you know? But, I mean, I look at that, it's not just Xhaka that costs us sloppy goals, is it? As a team... We still give away sloppy goals. Well, we got 20 goals against us so far this season? Or is it more than that? I'm not sure.
24 maybe, something like that.
Yeah, okay. That's not exactly top four material, is it?
No, but it's interesting. Again, there you say as a team we've let away lots of goals, but when you talk about Xhaka, it's Xhaka's fault of giving away goals. Again,
I'm doing it to wind you up, aren't I?
I know it's terrible.
But was Xhaka like this when he was at Gladbach? Was he?
He did have errors. Yeah. He did. I mean, the last season he had there before the winter break, he got sent off, and it was really stupid. He just lashed out a player, got sent off, and then he came in for the second half of the season, didn't get booked. Because during the winter break, like Lucien Favre was like, you're not doing this anymore. And really sort of railed it into him. And he was superb and he was a great captain before he left. I know some people don't like Xhaka and think we can get an upgrade. I'm not saying we can't. Obviously we can. But I think when you look at the fact that Arsene used him for like every game that he possibly could, and so has Emery, there's a reason why he's being picked. And I agree with Si. I do think it's 4-2-3-1. I know what you're saying, Jace, about the 4-3-3. That was forced upon him because the players at PSG basically said to him, well, I say the players, Neymar said, we're playing 4-3-3.
I thought he played 4-3-3 at Sevilla.
He was playing it at PSG because Neymar said, we're playing 4-3-3.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about PSG now. I'm talking about, I thought he played at Sevilla.
You know, managers change and move on from them, you know.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, I look at Xhaka and, you know, the difference in quality between our midfield, between the Tottenham game and the United game was, you know, it was chalk and cheese, right? You know, United dominated our midfield, right? Let's make no bones about it. Yet, you know, I thought Xhaka was superb against Tottenham. I thought he was excellent. You know, my kind of gripe is it's the silly stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's the easy stuff.
I'd argue there isn't a player in our squad who doesn't do that.
Oh no! Look, I'm not going to argue that point with you. I really am.
No, Torreira has been arguably our player of the season, and I've seen him two or three times give the ball away in really dodgy areas and switch off as well.
Yeah, but he hasn't kind of cost us goals in the way that Xhaka has, and you know.
I mean, the Chelsea game, he let someone run off his back and step in and score their winning goal. He completely switched off for it.
He was new to this. It was his second game for us, or first game for us, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you still rate players in the game and their performance. Yeah.
Not saying you're doing it, Jace, but there is a degree with Torreira and a degree with Xhaka where, because it's Lucas Torreira, and I mean, I love him as much as the next fan, things will let slide. And with Xhaka, he is a lightning rod for criticism and abuse. Not saying you're doing it, but some fans do it. And that's the way with every team and every club. There are certain players who get it.
I do it with Mesut Ozil. Yeah. I slate him so badly.
Let's be honest. Myself and John were talking about this last night, where dependent on your view of a player, okay, you will see, it's like the three dives, the bookings for simulation on Saturday. Mm. If you're a Guendouzi fan, they caught his hip. If you're a Xhaka fan, he was clipped. If you don't like Mustafi, it was a disgusting dive. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Yet, when you look at the lunge on Mustafi, etc., and he was actually clipped, that was probably the one for me, and I am a big Mustafi fan, I make no bones about it, where, you know, I thought, that's a penalty for me, you know? But then again, I only use one eye because I don't really care.
The question I have for Xhaka is... I do it when I look at the whole 11, you know, Arsenal's best 11. I think, where would I upgrade? You know, I'm not upgrading Aubameyang and Lacazette. Would either of you upgrade on Xhaka, or is he good enough for you to say, no, this is our guy? Or do you want to go out there and buy a Benega or someone else? Because for me, I don't think we need to upgrade in that part of the pitch.
I don't think so. I don't think there's, unless you are looking at the team and saying, okay, we are now constant title contenders and we're looking to win the Champions League, then maybe. But I think you can win the league with Granit Xhaka. Like, some of the things he does and the quick thinking and the passing he does, it's like reminds me of Alonso.
He's still only young as well. I mean, how old is he?
He's 26.
So, do you know what? If I'm going to be incredibly harsh, and I mean I'm being incredibly harsh here, I look at Granit Xhaka and I look at all the wonderful things he does do, okay? You know, his range of passing is fantastic, right? Or, you know, he does... You saw against Tottenham, you saw the drop-off in performance, even though our performance against United was good. You know, we don't... And you can talk about being at home and what have you. I don't really care. But the drop-off in performance on that midfield from the scum game to the Northern scum game was marked, right? But it's these stupid mistakes that he makes where, you know, the cross-field ball, which he can play that 99 times out of 100, and the stuff that he sees, like giving the ball away in the box on Saturday... This is stuff that he sees, letting the ball run past him against Wolves. Mm. You know, he's a better player than that, and that's what annoys me about him. The only issue I have with him where I would upgrade is his mobility. If you can get a like-for-like player, and I can't name one, so don't ask me, who's more mobile and more nimble around the park, then I would upgrade.
Yeah, he does run in treacle.
I look at players who I hate comparing players, but the closest sort of comparisons, like what's his name? Is it Javi Garcia who went to Bayern Munich? Who we were looking at? Or is it Javi?
Javi Martinez.
Sorry, that's it.
Big,
big unit, could play centre back if you really needed to, but it was essentially a sort of DM type and would sit and ping balls around. Xabi Alonso was never rapid, quick.
No. It reminds me a bit of. Sarri mentioned it. For Chelsea, I mean, Jorginho is a bit more mobile than Xhaka, but he's not, you know, but not very strong, quick.
No.
Around him. You need. Yeah. Jorginho has Kovacic and Kante, and Xhaka needs Torreira.
I'd tell you what I'd swap him for, Verratti.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't like Xhaka's silly mistakes, then you're not going to like Verratti because he gets sent off every game.
but look, I don't mind that as long as he's able to get around the park a bit more. You know, and to be fair, like I said, I've been incredibly harsh on Xhaka. Mm. You know, I think Torreira at the moment, there's a massive wank fest about him, okay? I've enjoyed his performances. I think he has been our best signing. I think our best player by... quite a distance has been Lacazette. I hate to say that because obviously the pirate is going to have a great big grin on his face, you know. So that hurts me to my core. But I think Lacazette, the way he's brought people into play, has been magnificent. I think Torreira, I'm going to mispronounce that name forevermore. I think it's a bit like at the moment, he's getting the same sort of press that Mkhitaryan had last season when he came into the team. He won player of the month.
As well, same.
Yeah. But Mkhitaryan won player of the month two months running, I think. And yet some of his performance were bloody awful.
Mm.
You know, they weren't good, you know, and it is when he meant to play the month. And you're looking at it thinking, are you watching the same sport as me? Do you know what I mean? I think there's that cult of personality around him now. And that's all well and good and great. I think the kid's done great. He's 21. He's looked solid. He's been sharp. Over the moon with his signing. I really am. But like, let's ease off a bit. Leave the kid enjoy his football. Let's not give him cult status yet. We, you know, let him enjoy. He's not even 6 months into his time yet. You know, he didn't come into this squad until after the World Cup. You know, there's going to come a time where his form dips.
Yeah.
And you want to keep it on an even keel where you don't over-egg him, you don't, you know, hammer him. It's like it will be at the moment. He's had a couple of really poor games. It still doesn't take away from the fact he's got some solid performances in the bank, which he can go back to draw upon to improve for the rest of the season, if you know what I mean. You know, you build up a body of work, and that's what these youngsters are doing at the moment.
Credit where credit's due with the club and Torreira and Darren Burgess, who's obviously, you know, the head of overall performance, Shad Forsyth, and Emery to a degree. You know, all of us were moaning and complaining that he wasn't playing in those first 5-6 games after the World Cup, as much as we knew why he wasn't playing. But they've, in terms of integrating him into the squad, managing his fitness, I mean, you look at the problems Spurs are having with muscle injuries and players there at the World Cup. They've managed Torreira exceptionally well as much as we used to moan at the club saying, oh, we're terrible with injuries. That transition from the World Cup has been superb from the medical department.
But in all fairness, and I'm going to sound like a bit of a dick when I say this, so my apologies. Okay. Darren Burgess obviously comes from AFL or Aussie Rules football. Okay. And when you look at the athleticism involved in that, and when you look, I mean, obviously we all talk a lot of Dom, etc. When you look at the sports science involved in that, Darren Burgess is at the top of his game in world sport, okay? In world sport, not just football, in world sport. I expect nothing less. And it's about time this professionalism, it's one of the really positive changes that have come into this squad now. So I expect that to happen. You know, it's not rocket science. If you let these guys do their jobs properly, this is the sort of development we should be getting. Yeah? You know, so, I mean, I've got to be honest with you. We're now applauding people for just doing their jobs well.
Right. Just one last one on the 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
I know we've got listeners' questions about that sort of stuff. Another reason we talk about having a wide man and playing it going forward, but do we think Nelson coming back next summer might sway into playing the 4-2-3-1 and you can play Nelson right or left? Because that might be a factor in his long term thinking. Because from what I've seen of Nelson playing in Hoffenheim, he looks like the absolute business.
Yeah.
Maybe better than Iwobi as well.
I think he'll come in and I think you'll see, you might see some games where you see Iwobi and Nelson either side of, you know, Lacazette through the middle, that kind of thing. But I think Nelson will come back into the team just because of how well he's done.
And the best thing is Emery's flexible, isn't he? It doesn't have to have a set formation.
The concern is, okay, now that bearing in mind, I've not watched an awful lot of Hoffenheim. You know, and when I say an awful lot, more than 25 minutes, you know what I mean? Okay. But all the clips I've seen of him doing well and scoring, he's coming inside a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, it's been spoken about by, I think, yourself, John, Dom, other people. Do we want a winger to stick out wide to help us give width?
I think if you look at how we started the season when we were playing 4-2-3-1, we were getting to the byline a lot, but it was the fullbacks.
Yeah.
And the runs inside from Iwobi and Mkhitaryan was helping open up the space for them to get in behind. So I don't think that's an issue. And Emery clearly likes that and likes using his fullbacks for that. So I think that would actually work. The interesting thing is that, you know, there's fans obviously worrying about defensive worries at the moment, and we'll come on to January transfers. I'm sure there's some questions about that. There's fans worrying about, you know, saying, oh, we should keep Ramsey now and get back to the negotiating table. Will we sell Ozil and stuff? A lot of it kind of weirdly also links in with the fact that we've got Aubameyang and Lacazette, because I think Ozil would probably, maybe the team would be built around him if we only had one of those. But the fact that you've got two and sometimes one of them has to play wide means you can't really afford to play Ozil as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've got to be honest here. I think there's some massive decisions for this football club coming up. Do you know what I mean? These are decisions which could make or break the next couple of seasons for us. Yeah. You know, it's going to be interesting times. And of course, all the old guard have kind of gone. You know, Ivan's gone, Arsene's gone. You know, you got Raul, you got Sven. You know, I was just on Ars blog this week, and they mentioned, you know, he got told by a German journalist, you know, very good authority, etc., that Sven tipped off the press that they were in Dortmund going to sign Aubameyang.
Yeah.
So these power struggles are obviously there. And my one concern is, and I mentioned this on the live shows, when Thomas Tuchel was manager of Dortmund, there was absolute, you know, him and Sven despised each other, and it ended up in Tuchel leaving. Now, with regard to player recruitment and with regard to, you know, the type of player and the individuals who come in, you know, Guendouzi, fantastic, really happy. Torreira, very happy. Leno, the unsung hero for me. I think he's allowed us to play a lot of the football that we have played recently through his ball-playing skills, etc. There were all sorts of rumours beginning the season that he wasn't deemed good enough.
Yeah.
Socrates, he's been better, far better than I thought he would be, but I'm not sold, okay? But I'm looking at the January transfer window, what's going to happen? Where are we going to deem that we, yeah, can we get a loan in? Can we get this in? Can we get in? But that summer transfer window, if things don't go right between Unai and Sven, and there's another power struggle, that could spell real trouble for us.
The summer feels huge, doesn't it? That summer window. Because there's no tournament, obviously. You've got a clean, full, Emery's going to have the full, you know,
time. He's had the whole summer last summer. Come on.
Yeah, but it's so much harder signing players in a World Cup year.
We did okay,
but I feel like that, and once you see, he's seen the team for a whole year, he's got a better idea of what he wants. I think that next summer is such a big window. I think it's absolutely massive. And you know, we're saying we want an upgrade on Xhaka. There's this lad over at Chelsea called Fabregas who's going to be out of contract, so we can just draft him in. That'll do.
All right, okay. So we want the striking, injury feigning snake back.
He's a very good footballer, though.
He's a very good footballer. And how much wages is he going to win? Fuck, we can't afford Ramsey's ego. Let alone Ramsey.
I agree. That next summer is going to be... It's a big, big summer. Especially if they let Rambo go for Zilch.
It's absolutely massive. And this is the thing, okay? You know, as a club, if Ramsey goes for nothing and ends up at a big club, how stupid do we look?
For me, it's the biggest window since the 2015 one, which we fucked up, because that was a year when we could have won the league and we only signed Cech. This is as big as that window, where you've got to get it right.
Do you have to remind me about that? Do you have to remind? I remember being on the transfer deadline day pod and Mark King was on with me, and we're chatting, and you know, and you stood there, we've only signed a keeper.
Yeah.
How, you know, I don't think I've ever felt so disillusioned or disappointed as an Arsenal fan, you know, apart from watching kind of a game, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you sat there and you're having to process this information, which to next door's dog doesn't make sense. It was ridiculous. So it's going to be massive. I'm not sure if I'm terrified of this summer's transfer window or if I'm excited. Because that relationship between Raul, Sven and Unai, God, I hope that works out. Because if there's a power struggle between any of those three, we could be in for a torrid time.
And I think Josh Kroenke will come in and bitch slap the lot of them and say, get out of my club. There you go.
Hey, and let's hope that is what's going to happen now. Maybe he could bring his wallet with him and open it up. And
that'd be nice. To steal daddy's checkbook. That'd be good. Right, should we do some listener questions?
No. Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? One second. I've got a question for both of you. I've forgotten about it.
Ever the professional.
Well, you know me, mate. You know, I turn it on, you know, turning a sixpence, you know what it's like. You know, we're looking at, you know, a pretty successful first sort of stint in Emery's career at the Arsenal. What do you think so far? I think it's been really successful. I'm really happy with it. But what do you think has been his biggest failing, the both of you?
Oh, good question.
Ooh. Hey, you don't get this on any other podcast, do you? You don't get this negativity for nothing.
Biggest failing. Well, I guess his biggest failing has been getting a tune out of Mesut Ozil. That would be arguably, like, you've got, I don't think anyone would argue that Ozil is not our most talented player in the squad.
Agreed.
So I think it's getting a tune out of him, because we've seen at other clubs he's done it. And I know obviously he's done it at periods at Arsenal. So yeah, I guess that.
Okay. Difficult, I think. I would probably, he's done so many things well. Maybe finding a way to get Lacazette and Aubameyang in the same team and firing, I think. Working out a way of getting them both on the pitch and both clicking at the same time. It hasn't properly happened. It's happened in patches, but I still feel like certainly he is leaning towards going one or the other.
Well, I've got to be honest with you, boys. I think there's a great point, and they both revolve around that front three issue I was talking about earlier on. So thank you for backing me up on that.
what's yours, mate?
I got to be honest, you're both wrong. It's solidifying that defence.
I knew it would be that. I mean, I did want to say set plays. I hate seeing Hector Bellerin marking someone who's 6'7". That annoys me.
I know. It's the one thing, because, look, you know, as much as I give Socrates a hard time, and you know, I was a bit out of order with the beginning of the season, okay, and he's done far better than I thought he'd been. He's not the player I thought we needed. He's Mustafi still goes to ground too much. But there's some great things in other, you know, you'll see some magnificent performances. But surely there's enough talent in with our centre backs and with our wing backs, other than Kolasinac going backwards, to improve that defence. And I know the full backs pushing up so high has been part of the problem, but you've actually had Torreira, you know, covering that a lot of the time as well. And I'm still wondering as to why we struggle so badly. And it's not even, you know, if it's a great counter-attack from another team, I can handle it, okay? If it's a piece of magic from another team, fantastic, well done. I think, you know, but all too often we leave in stupid goals. The United game says it all, you know? The header against Tottenham, you know? It was a simple marking exercise. A simple marking exercise. I know that Dyer's offside, but surely we should do better there. Do you know what I mean? The goal against Bournemouth, how many men were back? How many opportunities to stop it?
Oh, don't carpenter it. Come on.
You know? But that's the point. It just seems as though we've let in too many stupid goals, and I think that's his biggest failing to date.
Okay. Right, I'm going to be honest with you now, because Danny's going to start shouting at me in the chat box. Right, we've got some listeners' questions, and then we're going to do our Fife's forum as well. So first question is from Noir Confidential. Simon, you can have this one. Are Spurs ruining football? That should just be the question on its own, but no, it's got some more. Those cunts keep getting free kicks and penalties by cheating, diving, and exaggerating contact while we get yellow cards for the same things. Is it a lack of referees' consistency, or are we just not as good at going down like little bitches?
Oh, how eloquently put. I think I touched earlier about lack of consistency. And we spoke about, didn't we, with the Son and the Mustafi in terms of the contact. And the hope is that the next season when we've got VAR, we won't have questions like this anymore. Because that should eradicate any doubt. I mean, it won't. There'll still be the odd one, but these contentious decisions, which I know it's always Jeff always says it when he comes on here, we seem to get a lot of them not going our way. We do, I think. But it will eradicate a lot of that, and it will get the consistency, because that's what we need. On the whole, I don't have massive complaints with officials. It's just a lack of consistency where you see something one week and then you don't see it given the next.
Yeah.
And hopefully when you've got that second look, we'll stop that.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I think VAR is going to be a big help. And to be fair, we've actually got quite a few decisions in our favour this season. It's just the last few games that have gone against us.
What's been more important this season, John? The hand of Rob Holding or Aaron Ramsey's ego?
Actually, I'd say the hand of Jan Vertonghen has been more important. Oh dear. But Ramsey's ego is definitely up there. Right, Jace, one for you from Mike from the Gooners podcast.
Jesus, what's he going to ask?
Right, rank the following players in order of arseholitude. This is a great word. Diego Costa, Marcus Rojo, and Gary Mabbott.
He knows Gary Mabbott's my Achilles heel. I hate that twat. Okay, I just detest him. Gary Mabbott, obviously, number one. Oh, I'm not being funny, okay? But Marcus Rojo and Diego Costa, okay? They're just the biggest pair of pricks in South America. Number one and number two. No, joint first. No. Gary Marbert first and joint second for the lads.
Fair play. Got one from our Steve, Mr. Lord Hillwood. There's a separate one just for Jace. I'll ask that one first. Jace, have you seen and what do you think of the wasabi Kit Kats available in Japan only?
Cheers, Steve. No comment whatsoever.
And also, can the lads say what formation they'd pick versus Karabag and who are the defenders for them? So should we all have a go at this? I assume we all think check and goal.
Yeah,
check and goal.
I would say you're going to have Jenko.
I think he might play the suspended boys.
I think Mustafi's out injured, isn't he? So
you'd start with Socrates and Koz, wouldn't you? At centre back.
Jenkinson, right back. Right, and then Maitland-Niles maybe left.
He might play Shithousery right back. Lichtsteiner.
He could play him right back and Jenko left, yeah.
I do wonder whether he might save Lichtsteiner for the weekend to play in the back three.
Okay, question. Does Nacho need game time?
Maybe.
I don't think Koz will start, by the way.
Really?
No. You don't think he'll give him like 50 minutes and then...
I think he might give him 30 minutes the other way around. We'll find out tomorrow because it's his presser, but I don't know.
You have the presser,
sir? I would assume that the rest of the team will be Smith Rowe, Nketiah, Elneny. Those kind of guys. Which is nice for them to play, you know, at the Emirates. I'm going to guess it's not going to be the biggest crowd ever, though. I've seen quite a few people giving tickets away.
What they
away
should do with
Twitter.
That is they should just go to a local school around the corner and just give them a load of tickets.
Yeah. That is the one thing. I know the ticket exchange has got better. But I would like it if, you know, the fans who are definitely not going, can't sell the ticket or give it to anyone else, could like say to Arsenal, look, just give my seat to whoever, for if it's for free or for a fiver or whatever.
If the club are really worried about money, they'll spend a tenner in there on a pie and a drink or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Problem is, it's hard to organise, isn't it? You know,
it's a nice idea, isn't it? But it's...
We've spoken about that over the years in this, but it's just difficult. The one thing I am interested to see is I think they're going to go 4-2-3-1. Mm. I really do. Okay. But who, you know, it'll be Elneny and who alongside him at the back? Would it be Guendouzi?
I guess it'd be Guendouzi, yeah.
You know, and then maybe an AMN in there somewhere. You know,
I would guess it's going
to be. Doesn't seem to like Willock in the two either. He likes Willock further forward, I think.
Yeah, my guess would be the three behind Nketiah, because I assume it would be Nketiah up front. It would be Smith Rowe, Willock, and Maitland Niles. Maybe, yeah.
It will be Mickey, might get a shot.
Yeah, and then you can have Guendouzi, Elneny in the middle. But yeah, I assume Coz will get some minutes, maybe Nacho will. Corporal Jenks, maybe by the end of the game he'll be the most senior man at centre back yet again.
He could stick someone. I don't know if he's I'd assume he's fit, I don't know, but he took him on tour, Owusu Tutu, the left back. He could give him a little.
Oh yeah,
he took him on tour and he quite liked him, so it wouldn't be out of the question to just.
This is the thing, is he going to give somebody minutes who's going to end up on the bench for Southampton?
I would give them minutes personally, but I'm not sure what he will do. I would give them minutes, but
I think Nacho and Coz have got to get some time on the pitch.
Yeah,
to get minutes in the legs, whether it's from the start or coming off from the bench, one or the other. I'd imagine you're going to see Jenkinson and people like that on the bench in Premier League games now, just because we're so short in defence, especially with suspensions and injuries and stuff.
Jenko will be getting a new deal soon. Fuck.
Mate, he's getting closer and closer to that testimonial. What's going to happen?
Do you know the funny thing is, okay, I don't think he ever lets us down. I think, you know,
he's been really good in the Europa League, to be fair.
Yeah, but throughout his career with us, okay, yes, he's made a couple of mistakes and what have you, but I think he's played to his talent level.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? You know,
he's living the dream anyway, isn't he?
He's fucking living the dream. Superb. And I got to be honest, as much as we take the mickey, I love that guy. I absolutely adore him, because the one thing you know with him, he leaves it all out on the park.
Yeah.
Whether he's playing or whether he's mowing the pitch, he leaves it all out on the park.
Yeah, so good question, Steve. Right, next one. I suppose we can all have a what's Lilla say on this as well, from Fred. Am I the only one worried about Liverpool winning the league? I hate those guys. I do think it's a genuine two-horse race, but I think City are just going to edge it. I don't know about Simon. Yeah. You speak with the press pack.
I think City will win it just because I can't see them outside the top six. I can't see City ever losing or not winning those games. Those 28 other games, it would be.
Yeah.
Whereas I can see Liverpool potentially coming unstuck. Well, I know the top six games would be big, but I think City teams just roll over for them way more than they do Liverpool.
Yeah.
And I can't see City dropping any of those points.
No, I think the big thing will be, it's like the two games against United, the two games against us for Liverpool. You know, we've drawn them once already. I'm confident we can get points at Anfield as well. I really am. And I think that's where they fall over. And I just look at City.
Much more than us playing City, I fancy. Yeah. Liverpool. Yeah.
Exactly. And I just look at City and I just think it's a better rounded squad. It's a better, some of the football they play is phenomenal. It really is. And I know the loss.
It's boring, according to Chris Carpenter.
They've not even had De Bruyne for the freaking whole thing. Jesus.
I know. And you look at it. Let's not include Chris in this conversation. You know, it's almost as if, you know, giving him mad cow disease for 20 minutes when talking about Guardiola. But you look, you know, regardless of the money they spent, regardless of all the nonsense, they play some fabulous football.
Yeah.
And they just look the best rounded squad to me.
Yeah.
I think they'd win it by 5 points.
Yeah. They miss Aguero when he's not in there, though. They ain't the same without him.
Yeah. But yeah, I think for City, for me, but don't worry, Liverpool will lose a game and their fans will still cheer when they get a draw against West Brom or whatever and run on the pitch and all that nonsense. Neil Chappers asked, do you worry about trying to maintain our intensity and high energy press through the busy Christmas period with so many games? Jace, what do you reckon?
I don't actually. I think we're quite intelligent about the way we press. You know, it's not that Klopp all out press. You know, it's not that, rock up with your cock out all game press. You know, we're quite smart about that. It's also still developing, you know. So I think we're going to get smarter about it as we go along. It's working fine at the moment. The Christmas period is the same as everybody else. You know, we've moaned about our fixture log. And I mean, I know we had United and Tottenham back to back, But that's the way the cookie crumbles. And we've actually got them back to back later on in the year as well. But I don't like moaning about it, and I'm not going to worry about it, because I think it's the injuries more than anything which are going to cost us at the moment.
Yeah,
that's the real stresses and strains on the squad are the injuries. You know, we see Kolasinac, and that's good going forward. Poor going back. Nacho coming back is important, but our centre backs now staying card free and fit is going to be really important with holding out. And, you know, to be fair to Koz, I give him a lot of stick, but he's coming back from a nasty injury. You know, he's going to need to be, you know, eased in, and we don't want to put too much pressure on him. I don't fancy playing Nacho at centre-back. And for anybody thinking that Mavropanos is going to be an instant fix, no. So those are the worries at the moment.
We'll be fine. We got Jenkins in. We'll be safe.
Yeah. But you look at it like this, okay, so if one of Aubameyang or Lacazette goes down injured, we're in trouble. There's no Welbeck, okay? If, you know, if for argument's sake, Xhaka or Torreira get injured, you know, as much as I like Guendouzi, he's not that standard, nowhere near.
All right, you know? Jace, we're on a 21-game unbeaten run. Don't drag me down, mate. Christ.
Oh. I told you, this negativity comes from nothing. I'm actually a real optimist, but, you know.
Right, next question, because Danny's shouting at me. One for you, Si, from Jamie. What are your thoughts on fans leaving the game early? I was at the game on Saturday and will hold my hands up and admit I left on the 80th minute because the game was dire and frustrating. I don't blame you, mate. I had to watch the whole thing and then talk about it for an hour. I don't know how I managed it. He says, in brackets, I don't usually do it. I missed the Torreira's bicycle kick and have kicked myself since. Hashtag fuck the ref. So what do you reckon on fans leaving early, Si?
Just don't do it. Don't leave early. Simple as. It's difficult for me because I was never a season ticket holder when I was younger, and I used to go with my dad. And my dad's strict policy: we never leave early because I paid and we're staying for the full game.
And I like that.
We would do the opposite, where we would just go and have a drink somewhere afterwards and wait for it to die down. But I can understand it when you go to every single week and it's shit, and you think, "Fuck it, I'm not wasting my time." But my simple thing would be, don't leave early.
Yeah.
Never was happen.
So that, fair enough.
The one I know, one of my mates went was at the Arsenal Leicester City game. I know that, you know, 2016, the Welbeck header.
Oh yeah, he
left for that, and I said, just don't. You got to stay in case something can happen.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, I don't blame the for Saturday for that Huddersfield game. Fuck it.
That was really dreadful. I can't remember the game now, but I remember my dad saying years ago, it must have been in the 60s. That they left and there was like 2 minutes left and Arsenal were losing, I don't know, 1 or 2 nil at the time. And then literally by the time they got to the pub, someone had rung up and said they'd scored 3 goals and won the game, and they missed the whole lot. They missed all the goals. So after that, he never left the game early. But
that,
I don't blame you for
Chelsea Saturday. And Carnal?
Oh, no. I'm talking about like in the 60s, Jace.
Sorry.
Yeah. Right. Two more questions and then we've got Fice Forum and then Gentleman's Nods and all that. There we go. Noir Confidential. Since our squad is showing such unity, do you think that getting rid of or bringing in too many players at once could disrupt? How many incomings or outgoings could ever be considered too many? I'll answer that. I think it's more about the character of the players you bring in. If you bring in like, I don't know, 10 players, then yeah, it's gonna disrupt the squad, obviously, because the original core group are going to feel like they're all being replaced. But I think you can still bring in as many as 5, and I think it's fine as long as they've got the right attitude and they've got the right fit. There's a lot more goes on now in transfers in terms of seeing what players are like off the pitch and whether they'll fit with the group and that kind of thing. And I think as a club, we've certainly looked better in terms of doing that in recent years. Last one, another one from Mike from Gooners podcast. This is a great one. Which player from a rival team would you rather have at Arsenal? Okay, you ready for this, boys? We all get to answer this. Mane, Sane, or Kane? Otherwise known as Harry Kane. But yeah, it's great. He's even put the little accent over the E. Si, who would you rather have?
In terms of what this Arsenal team needs,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Kane's the best player out of them, but I would have Sane if I was picking him for our team.
Fair enough. Jace, who would you have?
I'd have Carney just to wind Chris Carpenter up, and I'd sell Lacazette.
And it would and it would wind up Spurs fans. Can you imagine?
Oh, can you imagine? Could you imagine it?
Captain like, of Spurs. Oh.
Instead of Saul saying, "I'm staying," you'd have, Carney saying,
Could you imagine if he turned up and he actually started calling? He started speaking with a French accent and put the little accent over the E and stuff. That'd be great.
I was born in Calais.
And having like Soul unveil him at the press conference or something like that would be.
Yeah, I think for the troll factor, I'd take Kane. But in terms of what the squad need, I think Sané would probably be the better one. And that is it for listeners' questions. I'm sure we had more, but Danny hasn't told me who else asked questions, so I can't do it. Right, so Simon, you're doing Fife's Forum.
Yes, Fife's Forum. I haven't had the chance to do a Fife's Forum, so this is my debut on it. I'm very excited. And we chose my question, which was, which Arsenal player would make the best Santa and why? The suggestions we've got in so far, Mike from the Gooners podcast said Yossi Benayoun, clearly. Noir Confidential said from the current players, Torreira or Santi from the former one. Santi's a great shout. The reason is the same. They would have no problem fitting into a chimney. So I'm reading these as I go along. That's fucking great. Even Santi's name already suggested he'd be a perfect candidate. Very good point. Josh from our lot said Diaby because you'd only see him once a year. And Jamie said not an Arsenal player but at the GFP is basically already Santa. That must be one of Danny's COD accounts, one of his fake ones. So gents, what are you saying? For me, I would go for Per Mertesacker. I think he'd be fucking brilliant Santa. Or I was thinking Colossal Snatch because he's used to having his sack emptied into him, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say,
edit that out.
I was going to say Kolasinac just because, you know, what's that film with Billy Bob Thornton? Bad Santa. He'd make a great bad Santa classic. Yeah. Just like angry. Just kids come in and they sit on his lap and he just looks at them with that death stare. Mm. They'd just be like, yeah, no, I don't want a present. Just run off. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be good.
No. I like the Santi shout, actually, because he's so happy and smiley, wasn't he?
Coming down the chimney would be
great.
Yeah. Hey. That would be a good one. Yeah.
You know. He's superb. You know, you've got to love his attitude. But the Diaby shout from Josh. Ooh.
Harry Kane. Yeah. Gentlemen's nods.
Yes.
Have you boys got one each?
Oh Jesus!
Right. I shall do some whilst you are frantically searching your Twitter.
I've got one to kick off with. Obviously, we mentioned it on the live show this week. Danny lost a mate of his. Mm-hmm. On the weekend, young Adam, who was a big Arsenal that fan, big Gooner. So thoughts with Danny and Adam and his family. Unfortunately, we lost a Gooner on the weekend. It's sad days.
I have on a slightly happier note. One, Mr. Carpenter has asked me to shout out.
Let me guess, Jan Vertonghen.
He did put his hand up, but no, it's not you, Jan. Mark Tullett, who is at Mark Tullett, that's M-A-R-C Tullett, proposed to his good lady over the weekend, and she said yes. And Chris sent me, I think he put the picture up on his Twitter. So congratulations, Mark, and for getting her to say yes and such. He did it all properly. He's down on one knee. So, yeah, there you go. You get your shout. Si, have you got one?
I haven't got a specific one, so I'm just gonna give it to the people as a whole, the fans. I know you guys have been doing exceptional work with the radio show. When I listen to it back, because I'm normally working after the game, so I can't listen to it live. And you're constantly getting donations put through, and I'm sure you guys mentioned it yourselves, but the support we've had for that and something that was started after the podcast, obviously the radio show, and how well it's gone and how well it's doing as a whole is down to the fans, the guys listening. So thank you to all of you guys for supporting us, because without you, we wouldn't fucking bother.
Forza Inter. Sorry, Icardi's just scored a goal.
Ooh. Oh, Spurs going out.
Beauty. As it stands, yes, they are. Lovely stuff. Oh, we could get him in the Europa League. Oh,
I tell you, I do love Mauro Icardi. He's a fucking great player.
He's a so ball, lady.
That goal he scored in the first game at the San Siro, just...
Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
I've got to be honest, I've got another shout-out. And it's to Steve-O at Footy Innit. And it's for the brilliant tweet this week. Breaking, French farmers go on strike next week. League Earn update. Six of this week, this weekend's matches have been postponed. He copied Carpenter in as well. It was golden. Steve-O, you're the man. Thank you, brilliant. Bro.
And just lastly, last nods from the podcast and in particular from Danny as well, although he's still here in the silence. Ariane Hadari twice on this week's radio show, and Yvonne Okafor every week. You're always in there with donations. Thank you so much. They really, really do help us out. Really appreciate it. But like Simon said, you know, without you guys listening, we wouldn't be doing it. So that is it for this week's pod. We've got the usual nonsense that will come after. Danny's little bit, but I think I'm going to do that for him. So should we do our wrap up here? And then we'll do the extras after. Jace, do you want to wrap it up or shall I do it?
Mate, I hear you like finishing it off.
Okay, I don't mind finishing it off. Right, so I will say thank you to Simon.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you back, mate. Always thank nice you. To hear your dulcet tones and to actually have someone who does it for a real job. Unlike me and the other guy, I'm going to
try to.
Let's go straight. A professional journalist.
Yeah, a professional journalist, a real one. Not a pretend one. And to the pretend journalist, Jace, thank you very much. I can't get away from you, mate. Doesn't matter whether we're doing a radio show or not.
I've got to be honest with you. I'm thinking of setting up a civil partnership with you. Just easier.
And of course, thank you for Danny in his silence pushing the buttons, and thank you to you listeners for listening as well. So that is it. We've been a Bergkamp Wonderland. After this, we'll have all the loans and roundups and all the favorite bit that Jason likes to go to sleep to. So no, you cheeky monkeys. Bye bye. And welcome back to part two. As you can tell, me and Jason are still here. Simon's had to leave us because, you know, he's got real jobs and things to do. But just do the loan and the youth team and the ladies and all that roundup. But I know you're missing Danny's voice on this. I'm sorry. So you're going to have to part with me. So in the Ladies' Cup, Arsenal won 5-0 against Charlton Athletic. 2 for Maidama and 2 for McCabe. Is that right? Yeah, I'm saying that right, I think. Under 23s, we lost 4-1 to the Scousers. Boo. We're now 8th. That's 3 back-to-back losses. We lost 4-1, 5-0, and 4-5. No wins in the last 5.
Ooh,
that's not good. Arsenal, that's the under-23s. Is that Freddie's team, isn't it? Ljungberg runs that, doesn't he? I'm sure it is. Yes,
it is.
So that's not so good. Although, to be fair, a lot of the under-23s are currently in our first team squad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's struggling a bit there, aren't they?
Yeah, so that's not so great. In the under-18s League Cup, Arsenal lost 2-1 to Everton as well. And then there's some stuff about Inter Milan scoring. On the loan watch, let's see, we have Hjar from the wonderful George Bird. If you want to follow that, it's arsenalyouth.wordpress.com. Reece Nelson was brought on the 59th minute as Hoffenheim drew 2-2 with Wolfsburg. Christian Bielik played the full game and was booked as Charlton Athletic lost 2-1 to Blackpool. Takuma Asano started and played 79 minutes as Hanover drew 1-1 with Mainz. I forgot we had Asano, Jace. Did you remember we had him? I had no idea.
Yeah, isn't he still out there? Isn't he still with us?
Yeah, he's still with us, yeah. I didn't have a clue. I thought we'd sold him.
No, he's unknown, though.
Yeah.
Don't you listen every week to Lorne Notre Dame?
I must have missed that one. Matt Macy played the whole game as Plymouth Argyle drew 3-3 with Bradford City, not the Pirates, but he's near Chris. 3-3. Chris has obviously been coaching him.
No. If Chris was coaching, there'd be 10 goals let in. You know, what was his goal difference against? What was his goals against last season?
They're in a semi-final, mate, aren't they?
Yeah, but last season they let in over 130 goals.
Yeah, that's true. That's pretty
130. Bad. They only played 3 games.
Well, you know, Oh, if he gets to the final, we're all going, apparently. I didn't know that. Did you know that, Jay?
I'll go down if he gets to the final, yeah. Oh.
I mean, I might not because it's the other side of the country, but you can go and take the piss for me.
Isn't he in the final?
No, I think he's in the semi.
Sure, so, Chris, so you're saying Chris has got a semi?
Chris has got a semi, everyone. Nice. Go congratulate Chris on his semi.
Is that the first one he's had?
No comment. Carry on. Kelechi Nakawale. Oh, for fuck's sake. I know he's going to mess it up. Nakawale, apologies, came on in the 81st minute and hit the crossbar with a free kick as Porto B beat Academia 3-0. Bought, idiot.
Academia? Yeah. Sounds a bit nuts. This is bad. This is bad.
Right, two more to get through and then you're done, listeners. You can turn it, I mean, you can turn us off now. It's fine. David Ospina was an unused substitute as Napoli beat Frosinone 4-0. And Callum Chambers wasn't involved as Fulham lost 4-1 to Man United. Oh, so, yeah, I think really it's only Bielik and Bielik, Nelson, Asano. I suppose Macy, the fact he's playing is good, but
yeah,
it's not too bad for the lone boys.
And to be fair, I mean, I feel for Chambers at Fulham, you know, that's not going to get fixed anytime soon, is it?
No, that's really, really bad. You know, I think they conceded more goals than anyone's ever done whilst being promoted from the Championship to the Premier League. I'm sure someone told me that. And it's basically carried on. So, yeah, that's it for the lone roundup. I don't know how Danny sounds this off. I can't remember. Do you know, Jace? Did he just say
I'm not sure. I think he moans an awful lot, doesn't he?
Yeah. Or is that in the extras? I get confused. I don't know.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I mean, I'm lost, mate. I'm lost. I've got to be honest. I'm either sleeping or driving. When I listen to this bit, you know,
hopefully not at the same time.
No, not at the, no, God, no, don't say that. Jeez, no, I don't want to die. I'm too young and I'm too pretty,
too young and too handsome to go yet. There you go. That's a good way to leave it. Right. Thank you for listening to the second part of the show and the car crash that has been. Apologies, there is no Danny this week, but he should be back next week, all jolly and happy again.
To be fair, there's not going to be much extras either. They were mostly libelous. They were really bad.
We'll have to make up something afterwards. So, thank you, listeners. Don't forget to join in for the next radio show, which is Carabag.
Carabag. It's Danny. It's Shredder. And I think it's Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's the lineup for Carabag. Carabag. Oh, Jesus.
You've done it again.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, Carabag. My apologies. And then on the weekend it's Josh, Ellis and Carl.
Yeah, for Southampton. So there we go.
I've got to do lineups the week after then, haven't I?
Yeah, don't worry about that. Right, that's it. We'll see you all soon.
Hey mate, it's been good.
It's been good fun.
Hey, I tell you what, we should do this more often.
It almost feels like we never do.
I know. I mean, it's once every 6 months, isn't it?
Big up Ramsey's ego. Right, Danny, you can stop recording there. That's a good way to end it.
Oh, hoi, hoi, cheeky monkeys. And here's a little bit of shenanigans from before the podcast started.
Hello, and welcome to A Bergkamp Wonderland, an Aaron Ramsey ego podcast. Today, I'm joined by Danny. Sorry, should I start that again?
I quite like that intro. That was good.
Yeah, I did quite like that.
Should I go back for that?
I think you should carry on, mate. It's fine, you know. This is how the listeners like it.
We're going to have to do it properly. We're going to have to do that properly.
Right, give it another go. Take two.
Right, okay, here we go. Dun, da, 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 da. Hello, and welcome to Bergkamp Wonderland.